3 separate wildfires were sparked in the Bitterroot National Forest in the last 24 hours. That's our top story tonight on Montana Evening Edition. Good evening, I'm Conrad Scheid.
And I'm Corin Cates Carney. We'll also tell you about a swearing-in ceremony of a brand new Blackfeet Business Council that starred for calls of unity and end in acrimony, and 13 Coltrane cars derailed in southeastern Montana.
Three fires in and around the Bitterroot National Forest have been keeping crews busy since yesterday evening. Todd McKay, Public Affairs Officer for the Bitterroot National Forest, says it's been difficult to get crews on a 4-acre fire in the wilderness near Paradise Campground.
It's pretty remote there in the wilderness, and so we dropped off a couple of HeliTAC members who hiked into the fire. They're currently on scene. The size of that fire is about 4 acres. We were going to have some Missoula smoke jumpers join them, but unfortunately the winds this afternoon have prevented that, so we have ordered some repellers from the Salmon, Idaho area, and they're planning on joining that effort later this afternoon or early this evening, whenever they can drop in there.
According to McKay, there's no containment of the fire so far. A second fire on private property in Blodgett Canyon near Hamilton was put out with the help of several firefighting agencies.
So we did respond with a couple of engines, and were assisted by the Hamilton Rural Volunteer Fire Department, along with several other rural fire departments who sent their engines. And firefighters were able to get that under control, and we've had several of them up there today mopping up, and I think they're still on scene, but we'll likely call that out this afternoon or later this evening.
McKay says that another fire near Lake Como in the Darby Ranger District was human-caused, but a quick response allowed crews to begin mopping up earlier today. Meanwhile, fire officials are asking Montanans to be very careful with their recreational and power equipment as we head into this hot, dry weekend. Montana DNRC Fire Prevention and Investigation Program Coordinator Crystal Beckman says a little bit of caution and preparation can prevent a wildfire ignition source.
We're just encouraging the public to take extra caution, whether they're out recreating and towing equipment, to ensure that those chains are off the ground and not dragging, which could cause a spark. Also, this weekend with the drier temperatures and weather that we've seen, it's real important for haying equipment and harvesting to ensure that they have a fire extinguisher with them and a source of water, along with equipment that could help till a fire line if a fire did start. Such example in Great Falls, equipment fire started with a rock. And so being aware of those conditions and ready to have the resources needed if a fire does start.
People who start a wildfire may be held legally responsible for its suppression costs.
Each fire is on a case-by-case basis, so then they'll take a look on whether it's negligent or whether if you've prepared and evaluate each situation. If you are found that within for the state that it was negligent, then they would talk about you'd be responsible for the suppression cost.
Fire officials also urge people to avoid parking or driving in tall grass, as a hot engine could start a grass fire. If a fire does get out of control, call 911 immediately.
In other news from around the state, a BNSF railway spokesman says the company is investigating the cause of a coal train derailment in which 13 cars came off the tracks in southeastern Montana. BNSF spokesman Matt Jones said the loaded train originated in the Decker Mine in Bighorn County and was en route to Superior, Wisconsin when the cars derailed near Warden at about 7:45 last night. No one was injured. Crews are still on scene this morning. Jones says the rail line where the derailment occurred is expected to be open by 4 tomorrow morning. It is not immediately known how many other shipments could be delayed or rerouted because of the accident.
The 5 newly elected members of the Blackfeet Tribal Business Council were sworn into office in a ceremony that began with calls for unity and ended with angry accusations. The Great Falls Tribune reports new council member Harry Barnes was elected tribal chairman. Yesterday's inauguration began with a non-denominational prayer service in which religious leaders asked for prayers for the success of the new council and for healing for tribal members. But as the procession began, an argument broke out among the new tribal chairman, the old tribal chairman, and an outgoing council member. Later, council member Cheryl Little Dog leveled criticism against the actions of the Bureau of Indian Affairs and against the council for failing to pay tribal employees in December and again in April.
A Washington state mining company wants a federal judge to throw out a $10 million compensation claim from a group of investors that includes former Governor Brian Switzer. Schweitzer's group controls mining rights needed by Mines Management Incorporated to access vast copper and silver reserves beneath the Cabinet Mountains wilderness near Libby. Schweitzer, a Democrat who served two terms as governor, says the $10 million is fair compensation for what the mining rights, known as claims, are worth. Schweitzer and his partners bought into the claims last year after forming a company called Optima Inc. But in recent court filings, attorneys for Spokane-based Mining's Management described the compensations figure as outrageous. They accused Schweitzer and his partners of attempting a shakedown of the company by promising to generate negative publicity for its proposed Mountain Ore mine if they didn't get their way. The company asked U.S. District Judge Dana Christensen to reject the compensation claim. Schweitzer was rejected the assertions that he tried to strong-arm the company executives. Mines Management turned down a March offer from Schweitzer to resolve the claims dispute outside of the court in exchange for cash and stock up to worth $10 million. In April, Christensen issued a preliminary condemnation order in favor of Mines Management. That set off a process to determine how much Optima should be compensated for its losses.
The Montana Highway Patrol says a punctured gas tank led to a car fire that killed a 4-year-old Billings girl as two families traveled along Interstate 90 between Big Timber and Livingston. Trooper Eric Fetterhoff says the car may have hit something along the road Wednesday evening, causing a dime-sized hole in the gas tank. A man in an SUV following the car radioed the driver and told her to pull over. The car caught fire soon after. The woman and her 14-year-old daughter were able to escape, and the man pulled his 7- and 9-year-old daughters out of the back seat. Park County Coroner Al Jenkins says they were unable to get Zaria Ray Santos out of her car seat. The 9-year-old girl was being treated in the intensive care unit in Bozeman.
A California fugitive who hit his Montana public defender in the head during an extradition hearing has been sentenced to 15 years in prison. Assistant Public Defender Eric Moore lashed out at 33-year-old David Anthony Aguilar Jr. in court yesterday, saying people like him don't change and they belong behind bars. Aguilar earlier pleaded guilty to assault with a weapon for hitting Moore in the head with his handcuffed hands without warning during a video court appearance in January 21st. The Billings Gazette reports Moore testified that his post-concussion syndrome and his eyes were still sensitive to light. Aguilar apologized and said Moore is right to be angry. District Judge Mary Jane Kinsler said the 8-year-old sentence recommended in the plea agreement wasn't long enough.
A Bozeman woman who was intoxicated and fell asleep while breastfeeding has pleaded guilty to smothering her infant son in a Billings hotel room in February of 2012. The Billings Gazette reports 35-year-old Tiffany Michelle Hosner pleaded guilty to negligent homicide yesterday during a hearing before District Judge Mary Jane Kinsley in Billings. Prosecutors say they will recommend a 20-year sentence to the Department of Corrections with 15 suspended. A sentencing date has not been set. Hosner, along with her 6-year-old daughter and infant son, had come to Billings to pick up Josh Hosner upon his release from the Yellowstone County Jail. Josh Hosner said he took their daughter to the hotel pool, and when he returned, Tiffany was asleep on top of the baby.
An employee of Veterans Service Center in Hamilton faces charges that allege that he put a note on the center door that appeared to threaten him for testifying against a co-worker who was acquitted for threatening the president. Joshua Matthew Getz appeared in Ravalli County Justice Court on Wednesday and was charged with felony tampering with or fabricating physical evidence and two felony accounts of intimidation. Court records say Hamilton police responded to the Valley Veterans Service Center on July 7th after receiving a report about the threatening letter. Three center workers say they believed it was written in retaliation for Getz's testimony against the former center employee, Dan Rochelle. Charging documents say a police officer searched the computers at the center and found evidence that Getz may have written the note.
Montana Department of Fish, Wildlife, and Parks officials are seeking public input on issues related to bison management and conservation in the state. The agency has scheduled a mid-July hearing in Billings to gather public input. Jackie Yamanaka reports.
FWP spokesman Ron Ossheim says this meeting is to continue the discussion with Montanans over whether to develop a statewide conservation strategy for bison.
We want to know from Montanans if there's a place in Montana where we would have wild bison, and we know it's a sensitive issue.
Basically, every time wildlife managers deal with bison, there's a lawsuit. Livestock groups are worried about maintaining the state's brucellosis-free status, and there's concern infected bison could transmit the disease to cattle. Brucellosis can cause cows to abort. In humans, it causes flu-like symptoms. Ossheim says FWP is asking the public to consider the creation of herds of disease-free, genetically pure wild bison. Other considerations include, where would those herds be located, and how might they be managed?
No question, though, if you're going to have wild bison, you're going to have some sort of containment. Our director has indicated that. I think most people agree you're not going to just turn them loose and not have to have some way of managing. Discussions of that. Are there places where there are natural barriers, assuming you would move them? Are there other places where you could construct some kind of containment? All of those sorts of things. What do you do with offspring? How do you manage a hunt? All those sorts of things. And that and much more will be a part of the discussion. And, of course, you know, there's concern about disease.
Asheim says before any possible bison conservation and management strategy is put into effect, there would be an environmental impact statement, which includes further public input. In the meantime, FWP officials are working on a separate plan to move bison from Ted Turner's Green Ranch west of Bozeman to a yet undetermined location by no later than November. FWP is considering proposals from groups interested in housing the roughly 145 animals. Asheim expects that could cause some confusion at the upcoming meeting.
I'm sure that there'll be some discussion on that group of 145 bison. You bet, Jackie. It just, that won't be the final decision on a long-term conservation strategy. Won't be complete by the time we need to move those bison.
Asheim says the agency will issue a separate environmental assessment for bison from Turner's Green Ranch before they're moved. When the agreement was reached with Turner to house those bison, it was hoped a statewide management plan would be in place, as well as a possible new location site for the bison at the end of that five-year period. But public opposition had brought that to a halt. Jackie Yamanaka, YPR News.
State and local public health officials at the Department of Public Health and Human Services are warning Montanans to beware of the increased risk of infection of West Nile virus, often carried by infected mosquitoes. Since the arrival of West Nile virus into Montana in 2002, more than 90% of cases in humans have been reported in August and September. West Nile virus infections develop in about 3 to 14 days after being bitten by an infected mosquito. Joel Merriman is an entomologist in the communicable disease section of DPHHS. He says about 80% of people bitten by an infected mosquito don't show symptoms of the disease.
It's really only that 20% of people that either develop West Nile fever, which is a less severe form of the disease that typically shows with high fever, maybe some joint pain, sometimes even rash. And then it's about, less than 1 to 2% of other cases that will develop neuroinvasive West Nile, which is a far more severe disease.
1 in 50 people infected by West Nile virus can develop those severe neurological problems, usually meningitis and encephalitis. Whether a person infected by the West Nile virus will develop neurological disease instead of the milder symptoms associated with West Nile fever is random, according to Merriman.
And most people won't even seek, medical attention for it because they'll just see it as, a headache of any kind. That's why typically the cases that are reported to the state health department are the most severe cases.
The elderly, infants, and people with weak immune systems in particular are the most likely to develop West Nile virus. 38 cases were reported in Montana in 2013. There is currently no medicine or treatment to West Nile virus symptoms or vaccines to prevent infection. Health officials have released a list of actions that can help reduce the risk of infection. Steps include avoiding dawn or dusk hours, wearing light-colored clothing, avoiding areas of standing water, and using repellents that contain DEET or picaridin. For more information, contact your local health department.
Authorities say a tour bus flipped on its side on a busy highway in Grand Teton National Park, leaving 7 people hospitalized. Park spokeswoman Jackie Skaggs says the other 20 people aboard were taken to a hospital for evaluation and released after yesterday's crash. 2 of the hospitalized victims were in fair condition and the others had non-life-threatening injuries. No other details were available. The crash occurred on U.S. 89 north of Coulter Bay Village on Jackson Lake. Skaggs says investigators believe the bus went off the pavement and flipped on its side when the driver overcorrected. The driver was among those taken to a hospital. His condition wasn't immediately known. Skaggs says the passengers were from one or more Asian nations, but she didn't have specifics.
And now for tonight's forecast. West of the Divide tonight will be mostly clear skies with lows in the mid-40s to lower 50s. Saturday, expect mostly sunny skies with a chance of showers and thunderstorms, highs in the upper 80s to mid-90s. In central Montana tonight, there'll be mostly clear skies, a slight chance of showers and thunderstorms in the evening, with lows 50 to 55. On Saturday, expect mostly sunny skies, with a slight chance of thunderstorms in the afternoon, highs 80 to 90. And in southwest Montana tonight, expect mostly clear skies in the evening, becoming partly cloudy, and chance of showers and thunderstorms in the evening, then a slight chance of showers and thunderstorms after midnight, lows 50 to 55. On Saturday, increasing clouds with a chance of showers and thunderstorms, highs 80 to 85. And now for the editorial comments of Ellie Hill.
Last week, the Supreme Court ruled, again, that corporations are people, and essentially that women are not. In an impressive misuse of legal theory, a fundamental misunderstanding of science and anatomy, and a blatant disregard for the rights of women, the Supreme Court decided in Burwell v. Hobby Lobby that closely held for-profit corporations have religious rights and can use them to prevent employees from getting the health care they need. The decision rests on some shaky presumptions. After all, corporations don't go to church. They can't pray. Yet, apparently, can have a religion. In the case of Hobby Lobby, that's one religion. What's more, Hobby Lobby, the closely held corporation in question, is no mom-and-pop enterprise. It's an enormous profit-making business that owns nearly 600 stores in 47 states, employs 13,000 workers, and generates more than $3 billion in revenue. Standing in the way of women accessing birth control in the name of religious liberty is a perversion of that idea. The free exercise of religion does not give us the right to impose our religious beliefs on other people, or to use religion to discriminate. Most Americans believe that private companies, like Hobby Lobby, should be required to provide their employees with health insurance that covers the cost of contraception. This decision will have real implications for real people, and not only employees themselves, but the children and family of employees. And with the definition of closely held corporation applying to more than 90% of businesses in the United States, and with such companies hiring more than half of the American workforce, this may affect far more women than was initially understood. Women's health decisions should be up to us and our doctors, not our bosses. This ruling continues a troubling trend in our country and in the courts of twisting our laws to serve powerful interests and not the people. In the vein of Citizens United and McCutcheon, this case threatens the very foundations of democracy. If large corporations can get out of obeying laws passed by our elected representatives by claiming they violate the business's religion, elections become a lot less meaningful. Hobby Lobby sets a dangerous precedent for a range of issues and protections that impact my constituents. Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg said in her amazing dissent in Hobby Lobby, "Now the court, I fear, has ventured into a minefield. And I say, yes, it is a minefield. It is a minefield because there is a war on women in politics. I make my health care decisions, not my boss. The floodgates are open. And as a young woman and a brand new mom serving in elected office, I will be working to do everything I can to be sure that women in this country and in women in Montana have access to the health care they need."
Ellie Hill is one of several commentators on Montana Evening Edition. The views expressed don't necessarily represent those of this station. If you have a comment, you can send it via our webpage at mtpr.org or on Montana Public Radio's Facebook page. Montana Evening Edition is also archived on our website. I'm Conrad Scheid.
And I'm Corin Cates Carney. Thanks for listening, and have a great weekend.